to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 24th, 2020. Residents of Juba Town accused some members of the police of harassing people during night patrols.
We are really tired of the police harassment in our area. At exactly 8 p.m., the police forces don't even want to see someone sitting in front of his house.
And the UN says families in South Sudan are at the risk of facing hunger.
Markets are under significant stress, as evidenced in sharp price increases. The price of a 50-kilo bag of maize grain, for example, increased by 36% in March.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents in the South Sudan capital, Juba, are accusing police of abusing citizens while enforcing a curfew aimed at curbing the spread of the coronavirus. The residents say police beat people within residential areas, including those found sitting outside their houses. The residents say some officers also extort money from residents and shop owners. Police spokesperson Major General Daniel Justin says residents should report any harassment by police. For VOA News, Viola Elias has the story from Juba.
Tony Alex, a 38-year-old resident of Juba Rock City suburb, says police harassed him a few days ago when they found him seated outside his home in the evening. Speaking in Arabic, Alex says that same day he saw security forces beat some residents without giving them a chance to explain why they are walking around the residential area. He says security forces demanded a bribe of nearly 5,000 South Sudanese pounds for a person to be released from detention.
We are really tired of the police harassment in our area. At exactly 8 p.m., the police forces don't even want to see someone sitting in front of his house. So when they find you seated, you are arrested and then you are taken to the nearby police post, whereby you will be charged an amount, almost 5,000 pounds. Sometimes if you refuse to comply and go with them to the police post, then you are beaten up.
Alex says he does not understand why security forces are deployed in residential areas to implement the nighttime curfew imposed by President Salva Kiir weeks ago. Alex is urging the Interior Ministry and the police commanders to intervene and order police officers to stop mistreating civilians in the residential areas. One shop owner in Juba's Munuki suburb, who does not want to be identified for the fear of reprisals from security forces, says he and other residents are terrified when they see police in the area. Speaking in Arabic, he says last week a group of armed police came to his shop before curfew time and forced him to accompany them to the nearby police station where he was asked to pay money.
The treatment we are getting from the police forces that usually comes to our area is inhuman and violent. Sometimes they beat us up, sometimes they take people to the police post. Many times when you are taken to the police post, they normally ask for bribes, and it could be in terms of cash or materials such as phones.
He urges the police officers implementing the curfew to respect civilians, since the main purpose of the curfew is to control the spread of the COVID-19 pandemic. Speaking in Arabic, Major General Daniel Justin, the South Sudan National Police Service spokesperson, is calling on the public to report all incidents of police harassment so that the perpetrators are held accountable.
That they are complaining to the media houses. Over there, information begin very late.
The public are complaining to the media houses, and sometimes such information comes to us very late. But no one has so far come directly to the police leadership or the commander of the police forces to report that he or she was beaten. I have been telling people to please call 1111 or call the commander in charge, because forces that are usually deployed are under a commander.
Justin is urging the public not to pay bribes to security forces who are enforcing the curfew. He says Interior Ministry officials are aware that many local shop owners and other citizens in residential still violates the curfew, which begins at 8 p.m.
With this issue of coronavirus, some shops in the residential area are still open even after 8 p.m. And then the shop owner claimed that because this shop is at home, but what about the person who comes to buy? That is why we are urging them to be closed at 8 p.m. and stop whatever business he's doing. So if one comes at 8 p.m., he must go back to his house and come in the morning.
Justin urges the public to cooperate with the police, who he says are working tirelessly to ensure that South Sudan, like other African countries, continue to fight COVID-19. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Families in the Sudanese capital Khartoum say the restrictions imposed by the government to prevent the spread of COVID-19 has affected the Ramadan tradition of sharing food and communal breakfast as Muslims begin the holy month of Ramadan. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Some Sudanese families here say it is painful to begin this holy month as people are in a lockdown due to the pandemic. Iman Juma, a resident of Khartoum's Shabia neighborhood, says the virus has deprived many Sudanese families from visiting each other, especially during Ramadan. Speaking in Arabic, Juma says the annual religious event used to be a great opportunity for extended families and neighbors to reunite and to strengthen social cohesion among Sudanese communities.
We will be unable to visit our neighbors as before, but we can still gather as small families in the house. We can still get together for breakfast as long as every one of us follow protective measures seriously. We wash our hands with soap frequently, apply sanitizers to avoid contracting the disease.
Last week, authorities in Khartoum closed all mosques, churches, and all forms of social gathering for 21 days to control the spread of COVID-19. Khartoum resident Fakhreddin Awad Hassan says the virus has prevented his family from joining other families for breakfast as usually they do on the first day of Ramadan. Awad says the speed with which the virus has spread has affected him psychologically.
I cannot close the village. I cannot visit my mother in Omdurman because according to our culture, in the first few days, in the first day of Ramadan, we need to gather as a family in Omdurman, all of us. This month, we cannot do it. Yeah, this is a real depression.
Awad says he used to provide a daily meal for poor people as part of the charity act, which is required during Ramadan.
I would like to pull a fatwa in front of my door. Everybody will come and eat with others, with me, because I'm in the middle of Khartoum. And there is a lot of labor, a lot of poor people, a lot of street boys. All of this, they used to come to my meal. But now I cannot do that. This is really painful for me.
Our dear Abbas Kuku, who heads the Sudanese Development Group, an association for tea vendors in Khartoum, says her group has instructed all members to stay home during these months of Ramadan to protect themselves and their families.
There are a number of charitable organizations that have distributed food items and non-food items to some families. Majority of them are widows, orphans, and vulnerable groups. We are expecting some more items from the Ministry of Labor, which will include some cash as well. So I hope this month will go smoothly without any problem.
Each tea vendor receives 12,000 Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of $100 from the transitional government to stay home. There are more than 27,000 tea vendors around Khartoum State, most of whom are widows from poor families. The Sudanese Islamic Faith Institution in Khartoum announced Thursday evening that the country will observe the first day of the holy month of Ramadan tomorrow, Saturday, April 25th. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, says food security situation in South Sudan could worsen with serious economic impact of the COVID-19. A top OCHA official in South Sudan says ongoing travel restrictions has slowed the importation of basic commodities from the neighboring countries. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Andrea Noyes, the acting country head for UN OCHA in South Sudan, says COVID-19 is affecting markets, especially in urban centers, which could worsen the hunger situation in an already food insecure South Sudan. Noyes says shutting down the borders and restricting interstate travel have put markets under stress and has sparked a steep increase in prices for food.
Markets are under significant stress, as evidenced in sharp price increases. The price of a 50-kilo bag of maize grain, for example, increased by 36% in March. The removal of non-essential staff from the workforce and the closure of non-essential businesses, coupled with the lingering impact of the devastating 2019 flooding, the desert locust invasion, and rapidly rising food prices, will likely increase in food insecurity and humanitarian needs.
Noyes says she believes the impact of COVID-19 on food security will be more noticeable in urban areas where households depend on the market for food supplies.
The urban population is likely to be more vulnerable because of the dependence on markets for food and a higher population density, which exposes them to greater risk of disease transmission.
The latest Integrated Pace Food Classification, or IPC, report released early this year estimates that 6.5 million people, or 55% of the population, were expected to face severe food insecurity between May and July lean season. Noyes says this number could increase now that the country is facing the pandemic. She says humanitarian agencies need to step in.
In the absence of large-scale national safety nets, additional efforts beyond those in the humanitarian response plan are required to prevent already extremely vulnerable households from becoming impoverished. Humanitarian partners have been adapting the response to deliver safely, responsibly, and effectively in this COVID-19 environment. Double ration food distributions as a transmission reduction measure have been undertaken in high-risk locations.
Noyes says these locations include refugee camps and camps for internally displaced persons, as well as ordinary citizens facing severe levels of food insecurity. Noyes says the removal of non-essential staff from the workforce and the closure of non-essential businesses, coupled with the lingering impact of 2019's devastating floods, the desert locust invasion, and rapidly rising food prices, will likely increase food insecurity in South Sudan this year. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the regional bloc IGAD is urging South Sudan's peace partners to implement the 2018 peace agreement. We'll bring that story right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could swap lives for a day, who would you swap with and why?
I'll swap with our finance minister because I think he's doing a yeoman job and I want to have a feel of what he goes through in a day.
I'll change with my dad because I love him so much. He has been there for us. I mean, like, he has taken us in good schools. He has taken care of us. Because for us, our mom is not working. We depend on our dad.
If I was to swap with someone, I feel I admire myself more than anyone in this life. And I feel I'm capable of doing what those people are doing. So I would not swap for any person.
I would like to change position with the president. Because I feel it would be nice to give instruction to everyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The corona pandemic is overshadowing this year's World Malaria Day in Africa, despite malaria's much higher death toll across the continent. The World Health Organization says more than 380,000 Africans died from malaria in 2018, 94% of the world total. Africa has so far confirmed about 1,200 deaths from the spreading coronavirus. Health experts agree COVID-19 must be stopped from overwhelming already weak African healthcare systems, but worry focus on the infection could roll back progress against malaria. Lenin Rovaga reports for VOA from Nairobi.
World Malaria Day comes at a time when Africa is struggling to make further progress against the mosquito-borne disease, but also as the coronavirus pandemic threatens the continent's weak healthcare system. The World Health Organization says Africa accounts for 94% of global malaria deaths, and between 2000 and 2014, malaria-related deaths fell by 40%. But according to the World Health Organization's World Malaria Report 2019, there have been a few gains in reducing malaria infections and fatalities since. Dr. Francis Kimani is with the Kenya Medical Research Institute. He says with the outbreak of COVID-19 in Africa, gains made against malaria could even be reversed.
COVID will affect our flow of resources, both human, financial, and all that, and that may draw back some of the gains that have been brought in malaria control, especially now that you're going into our malaria season with the long rains in and the peak season coming up. If resources are diverted to COVID and other issues, if the population is not able to access healthcare promptly, if the supplies, drugs, and malaria testing kits don't get to the facilities in good time, then obviously we expect that there might be some reversal in terms of the gains that have been gotten in malaria control.
Further complicating the fight against malaria, some symptoms such as high fever are similar to the coronavirus. The London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine's Professor Colin Sutherland says that could also undermine progress against malaria. He spoke from London via a messaging application.
Any person with respiratory symptoms and a fever will, of course, be suspected of having COVID anyway and will be treated as a potential COVID patient. So there is a danger, of course, that malaria will be missed and not treated in that case.
Despite the challenge to fighting malaria from the coronavirus, there is hope for making bigger gains against the parasitic disease. Africa has been rolling out a promising malaria vaccine that the World Health Organization says is effective in young children. Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi in 2019 introduced the RTSS vaccine, targeting around 360,000 children annually. Dr. Kwaku Asante is the lead scientist for the Ghana Malaria Vaccine Pilot. He spoke from Accra via a messaging application.
The latest on the RTSS Malaria Vaccine Pilots is very exciting. We have realized that uptake of the first dose of the malaria vaccine is about 70% in the areas where the vaccine is being conducted, and the evaluations are also going on very well.
The program will run through 2022 as scientists study the effectiveness of the malaria vaccine for wider use in Africa. Medical researchers are scrambling to develop a vaccine for the highly infectious coronavirus that they hope to have ready next year at the earliest. Meanwhile, some anti-malarial drugs have been touted as a possible treatment or even cure for coronavirus. U.S. President Donald Trump has promoted the use of hydroxychloroquine as a possible game changer against COVID-19. Medical experts like World Health Organization Kenya representative Rudolf Eggers have cautioned that the effectiveness of such drugs against the coronavirus is not clear.
There have been some small studies done that show that chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine may be effective against this COVID disease, but in fact it's not proven yet. The evidence for this is actually quite unclear. So as we are at the moment, we actually cannot make a definite statement that the antimalarials are actually beneficial in the treatment of this disease.
A U.S. government study released this week also suggested the use of hydroxychloroquine might be linked to higher death rates. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
UNICEF and Microsoft Corporation have announced the expansion of a global learning platform to help children and youth affected by COVID-19 continue their education at home. UNESCO says that globally, at least 1.5 billion students and 63 million primary and secondary school teachers are affected by the unprecedented disruption caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Schools have been closed in 191 countries. For VOA News, Mavis Ochre has more from Ghana.
The Learning Passport started off as a partnership between the United Nations Children Agency, Microsoft, and the University of Cambridge. It was developed to provide education for displaced and refugee children through a digital learning platform. It has now undergone rapid expansion to develop country-level curriculum for students whose schools have been forced to close because of COVID-19. The platform would also provide resources to teachers and educators. Abian Rana is the UNICEF Regional Education Advisor for Eastern and Southern Africa based in Nairobi, Kenya. He says out of 21 countries his office work with, all except Burundi have closed their schools. He says almost 120 million children in the region now are out of school, and the learning passport could be a resource that can be used to reach children at home.
So children are not learning, and we are trying to reach out to them in different ways to ensure that there is a continuity of learning even when they are at home. And this learning passport as a platform can be a basis for countries to use to support that initiative.
Rana says the learning passport was originally designed to provide education and school certification for children who were on the move, especially when the Syrian crisis began and many children were displaced. Rana says students will need to use devices such as laptop computers or tablets to access the learning platform, and that they can download the material and use it offline. He says UNICEF and its partners are also looking for other ways to reach children out of school through radio and television and text messages, which could all be uploaded in the learning passports.
So in those cases, the governments have, in many of the countries, started radio programs that children can actually listen to at home and continue their learning process through what we call interactive radio instructions. And children can actually listen to their teachers, their lessons over the radio, which has a lot more coverage than, say, internet. And hence, we are reaching the most deprived children through those kind of channels.
Now, as COVID-19 has expanded rapidly, the learning passport can become a repository for learning models that could be specific for a national curriculum or global library accessible by anyone who wants to use it.
So it will have both kinds of content. It could have content that could be used in, say, Malawi, which will be uploaded onto that platform, and then, you know, it can be used immediately, or which is what we call ready to deploy. And of course, there will be globally available repositories of global content that can also be adapted and used in the countries.
He says the learning passport is a way to have different types of teaching methods in one place so governments can adapt it for different parts of the country, be it remote areas, slum communities, or cities. It cannot solve all problems, however. UNESCO, the United Nations Education Agency, says about half of all students out of school because of COVID-19 pandemic do not have access to computer or the internet. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Ghana.
The IGAD Council of Ministers is urging President Salva Kiir to dissolve the Transitional National Legislative Assembly by the end of this month and reconstitute it as per the terms of the revitalized peace agreement. A government spokesperson acknowledges there are delays in implementing the deal, but says the call to dissolve the parliament during COVID-19 pandemic is not realistic. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
In a communique issued Thursday, the IGAD Council of Ministers said it noted with concern delays in the completion of some important pre-transitional tasks such as reconstituting the Transitional Legislative Assembly. The Council urged President Kiir to dissolve the current Assembly by the end of the month and called on the parties to reconstitute the Assembly. Transitional Unity Government spokesperson Michael McQuaid says even if Parliament were reconstituted today, it would be impossible to hold any sessions because of the partial lockdown aimed at curbing the spread of the coronavirus.
Parliament is working in form of its committees. Its presence is far better than none, because once you dissolve it, it means that there is no legislature any longer. There will be a vacuum. How will the Parliament sit under the current circumstances?
Under the peace agreement, the Transitional Assembly should expand to 550 members, consisting of 332 members from the now defunct Transitional Government of National Unity, 128 from the SPLM-IO, 50 from the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, and the rest from opposition parties and former detainees. Chapter 1 states the duration and terms of a reconstituted Transitional Assembly is to run concurrently with that of the Artigonu until elections are held. It also provides for power sharing at the state and local level, but the parties are still in a dispute over who gets to appoint governors to the 10 states. The IGAD Council called on the parties to immediately resume discussions and reach a deal within 2 weeks. McQuaid says the president should decide what happens next.
It was a disagreement, but it seemed to have been resolved, except that the presidency is the one supposed to come up with the final decision. It is the presidency which is supposed to come out with the final decision.
Josephine Lagu, who chairs the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, says the disagreement is mainly between members of the now defunct Transitional Government of National Unity and the SPLM-IO.
SOA really is not a party to any outstanding issue or tension regarding the formation of the state government. I think SOA has only one state that is allocated to it by the agreement. And so we are not a part to the dispute.
Lagu says there has been a delay in appointing governors because leaders of the parties are now setting their sights on the general elections at the end of the transitional period.
If we all start now looking beyond, the implementation period and start focusing on, election, then actually, we're going to derail the peace agreement.
South Sudan in Focus reached out to the SPLM-IO's Stephen Parkwall, spokesperson of the pre-transitional committee overseeing implementation of the remaining tasks of the pre-transitional period, but the calls went unanswered. For VOA News, I am Lesuba Memo in Juba.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Habib Gelbi by John Kuduse.
Habib Gelbi, and Gundi Dar Zabir, and Gundi Dar Komalela. Habib Gelbi, and Gundi Dar Zabir, Gundi Dar Komalela. Sika Uganda ke, Sika Uganda ke, Sika Morocco ke pe, Sander Zabir Uganda. Sander Zabir ya mama, Sander Zabir ya bibi, Sander Zabir Uganda.
We've been listening to John Kuduse with the song Habib Gelbi. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for listening, and remember to stay at home, wash your hands with soap, practice social distance, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
And that's a free Uganda.